last night saw the UK and Ireland premiere of The Journey. The movie centres on Ian Paisley and Martin McGuinness and their transition from fierce opponents to being dubbed the Chuggle Brothers. It's received mixed reviews from the critics. Finney spoke with actors Colm Meaney and Timothy Spall and the film's writer Colin Bateman.
Do I recognise you from somewhere?
This is Dr. Ian Paisley, leader of the Democratic Unionist Party.
And this is Martin McGuinness of the Irish Republican Army.
These men are anarchy. They are the Troubles.
I only met Martin once, but it was during his presidential campaign, and I had supported him as a candidate, and he asked me to host the final rally. So, you know, I was very aware of the controversy surrounding Martin. That wasn't in any way an impediment to me playing the part.
So how do you prepare for a role like this, which will be scrutinised to some extent from the public because they know of this story so well?
When you're playing a character like this, you're not trying to do an impersonation.
Yes.
It's in the context of the script, it's in the context of the story, and you have to find the reality and the emotional reality of how this man would respond to these sets of circumstances. Tim had enormous challenges, of course.
These characters are very public figures, so everybody knows who they are.
People will always, I suppose, think of the voice. One of the key things we noticed about Ian Paisley, so how do you go about preparing for that?
Listen to a lot of his sermons. I looked at when he's up on the stump there.
What I'm really asking is, were you walking around your house doing that, shouting, yelling, the stuff that he would have done, the preaching, talking to your family like that?
Well, I did a little bit of that, but I didn't do it in my family. I do have another room where I can go and do it.
I know. It will take a miracle for these two to work things out.
The two men upon whom this entire peace agreement depends are now by themselves in a car.
Yes, Prime Minister.
If they can just get over their poisonous past.
With the controversy that does surround both characters, has it been glossed over in any way in the movie because it's a fictionalised version of real events, so to speak?
No, absolutely not. No, the film is around these events, the events that happened at St Andrews and on this trip back to Belfast. I mean, because how did these two guys come from such polar opposite positions to being so close and to working so closely together? No matter how it happened, no matter how it came about, it's an inspirational story.
The two of you would have to be in quite close proximity, the back of that car, the airplane. How is that, filming that?
Controlling my flatulence was an extraordinary effort because I would hate to subject...
Did he not manage?
I think we were having a flatulence control competition. I failed.
At the end of this, either we hold the peace or we go back to war.
Some people might question, Colin, why it has to be fictionalised for something that is based on real events. They might struggle to understand that.
Yeah, I can understand that. But actually, do I want to go and see a movie which would have to be about 10 hours long to really do justice to all the mess we've got ourselves into over the years? I don't want to see that. You know, I want to make a film that people are going to find fascinating, hopefully, be entertained by, and see actually two real human beings having a go at each other.
Every movie will have people that love it that maybe don't, and the critics. How do you take sometimes negative reviews for something that you put your heart and your soul into, you've worked really hard on?
Yeah, I don't read them. You know, sometimes I read a review by accident, but generally speaking, I don't read reviews.
Well, same here. I mean, if you do end up reading a nice one, you always feel quite pleased, and then if you read a bad one, you feel terrible. The trouble is, a terrible feeling hangs around a lot longer than that. It is very disappointing when you know that there's been 100 people hammering, working so hard to do it, and sometimes you get the feeling that critics have not been at the same screening, or that they seem to think that people set out to annoy them rather than appraising the film from a point of view.
Well, I think if you accept the really good reviews, you've got to accept the really bad ones as well. You know, everyone has an opinion. You know, if I get a really bad review, I'll go round to the critic's house and put the Windies in.
This is our only opportunity to build something that will last.
Well, the political commentators Alex Kane and Malcolm Docherty went to see the movie for The Nolan Show. Morning, Alex.
Morning, Stephen.
Morning, Malachy. Good morning,
Stephen. Good morning, Alex.
What did you think of it, Alex?
Oh, dear. I didn't like it, Stephen. Let me just one caveat. I think the performances, I think Spall and Meany were very good. I heard them being interviewed yesterday as well, and Spall made the point, you know, you work with the script, you work with what you're given, that's what an actor does, interpret. They did it extraordinarily well. The problem is that you're required not only to suspend belief, you're required to suspend all belief. And I think it just wasn't, none of it was plausible.
What do you mean by that?
None of it was plausible. I'm saying that not just from the concept of someone who understands how peace processes work, who understands what happened at St Andrews and so on, and just know, I'm trying to be careful because I don't want to put any spoilers in, but you just know that background was all wrong. The journey itself would never have happened under those circumstances. It wouldn't have been trailed like that. So many things you just said wouldn't have worked. What you then ask yourself is, and I think Colin touched on the point there when he said it would have taken 10 hours to tell the real story. My problem with this film is that I'm not sure it's any story at all. It isn't the story of the peace process. It isn't the story of the two men. It isn't the story of how they came together. It's an. I think the film is billed as an imagined journey. There's no. And I think the basic criticism I would make of this. And Colin is a good writer. I've read some of his books and the detective on Dan Starkey, and so they're good books. I just think he doesn't understand the politics behind this, and for me, that's where it fails. It's so incredible that it's almost like you switch off mentally because you think this doesn't work. And the other thing is, and it was mentioned on The View last night, you know, some youngsters were asked what they thought about it. We're going, oh, I didn't know that's how it happened. What worries me is that we're getting a form of history. We talk about fake news now, that there will be now people growing up thinking that the peace process at St Andrews happened in the back of a car in a drive to Edinburgh Airport, which it didn't, never did, and none of those scenes were credible.
Maliki?
Well, I'm with Alex. I thought it was complete tripe. I mean, I do think there were moments of really good dialogue. I mean, Colin Bateman's very good at that. And there were moments where, you know, the political analysis in the dialogue was very sharp, you know, and that's a difficult thing to do. But I thought this was absolute bilge. I mean, I think, there's a political premise behind this film. The political premise was stated quite clearly a couple of times by one of the diplomats advising Blair. And one of the things he says was that they are the troubles, these two men, and that's not true. Another one was that the political parties in Northern Ireland are like bickering children, right? I think that was the phrase used. And that's absurd. There's no sense of there actually being a political problem other than the interpersonal relationship between these two men. And then one of the men is presented as emotionally constipated. That's Ian Paisley. Now, the impersonation of Paisley by Timothy Spall was superb. I really was impressed by it. I was not remotely impressed by Colin Meaney's representation of Martin McGuinness.
Why not?
Well, I've spent more time in Paisley's company than I've spent in McGuinness's, so maybe I got it wrong, but I didn't think that he represented McGuinness. I think there is something in common between Martin McGuinness and Ian Paisley. I think both of them were very similar in that they were both deeply naive men. They were on some kind of spectrum of naivety. They both believed impossible things in their youth. Ian Paisley believed that God was upstairs, and Martin McGuinness believed that he could throw the British Army out of Ireland, and both of them were daft. Both of them arrived at utterly stupid and untenable visions, and both of them took 30 years, you know, to overcome those visions. And both of them remained fairly naive men afterwards. I mean, Martin McGuinness's understanding of politics was essentially that he was a kind of a Mandela figure and that he could transform the mood in Northern Ireland by going to football matches and shaking hands with the Queen. So he was as silly at the end as he was at the beginning. But to focus on the film itself, the notion was that we have one man who is wise, who's all-knowing, who can read, quote the Bible back to Ian Paisley, and who ultimately can win this stulted, deeply troubled old man and open his heart. And that's what it was. It has no bearing at all on the politics of Northern Ireland. It had no bearing at all on the actual relationship between those men. If somebody can show me a film which will explain the miracle that did happen between those two men and how they came to be so close, then that would be worth doing. But I think what that film would show was that these men were fundamentally very, very similar in their fundamental naivety. They were both damaged, difficult, odd men, and they've somehow found a common oddity between them, and that was that they were both blinkered and didn't understand the world they lived in.
I'm just looking at a Belfast Telegraph article here, which has the headline, Timothy Spall's Joy as Paisley Widow Endorses the Journey. The actor who plays the late... I'm reading from the Telegraph article here for the first time, just out loud. The actor who plays the late firebrand preacher turned politician Ian Paisley in a major movie which opens today personally visited the former First Minister's widow at her home. Timothy Spall also revealed Baroness Banside presented him with a goodie bag of memorabilia about the late DUP leader while he was at her home.
Well, Eileen may have been very impressed by the representation of Ian.
Yeah.
But she knows
I think Ian Paisley Jr. was also full of praise.
But they know that that story is wrong. The story in the film is that Ian Paisley doesn't even know why he's at St Andrews. You know, that he's got no notion in his mind of making a deal. Ian Paisley spent years getting to St Andrews, and the British government spent years of effort to get him there, as they'd spent years of effort with Martin McGuinness and Gerry Adams to get them there. So they both knew what they were going there for. And there was a, and at the end of the deal, there was still a huge obstacle. And that obstacle was that Sinn Féin had not, and was still refusing to, endorse policing in Northern Ireland. So if you were left with only St Andrews, you would have a Sinn Féin in government, a governing party refusing to recognise its own police force. So, I mean, that was the problem they were left with at the end, you know? So so where is this miracle? Where is the validity in the handshake? Where is the tenability of the whole representation of
St Andrews? Sorry, can I just come in? I think the real story here, oddly enough, of St Andrews and that peace process, it's oddly enough, it was never between McGuinness and Paisley, because I don't think Paisley ever wanted the deal. I think he went to St Andrews determined to say no to the deal. The real story in that whole peace process at that moment was the conversion of Peter Robinson, because Peter Robinson was the one who kept this, from the DUP point of view, he was the one who kept the assembly going in 1998 when the Paisley wing of the party wanted to destroy the whole thing. It was Robinson who basically took the line, if we let this fall, we will never get the chance. It was Robinson who had to persuade Paisley. It wasn't McGuinness who persuaded Paisley, it was always Robinson who persuaded him.
Can I just ask you both, just going off on a slight tangent, if either of you heard Jim Dixon on the radio this morning?
Yes.
What were your thoughts, Alex, first, as he described the injuries and the operations he's still having 30-odd years later?
Well, you summed it up. I think you asked him the question, Stephen, about, you know, about drawing the line. And you can't draw a line if someone who's still... He's almost 80, so you're talking about he was 50 when this happened. 30 years later, he's still having operations, which must become more and more difficult and painful with the age. But that's everyone, Stephen. And it's not just him. Everyone. It doesn't matter what side you're on. Everyone who has a limp or a missing arm or, you know, facial scarring or whatever it is, or memories or flashbacks or nightmares... That is the, you cannot draw a line under that. Draw a line under the thousands of their wives, brothers, sons, sisters. It doesn't work.
I guess, Maliki, you know, without me taking a position, because of course I can't, I'm not allowed to, but what it did do for me this morning is it just reminded me that among all of these political negotiations and what-ifs about political moves, that reminded me this morning of the real life current present tense trauma that people have from decades ago incidents.
Yeah, and there was a moment in the film that recognised that quite well. I mean, it was one of the sparks in the moment where Paisley turns on McGuinness, and it is precisely the Enniskillen bomb that he addresses. And again, Alex doesn't, you know, there's warnings against spoilers, and he's right, so I don't want to go into that. But the other thing that came out of your programme this morning, not just from Jim, but from the other callers, was religious belief. Nearly every caller was speaking from a foundation of religious belief and saying, I mean, Jim doesn't call it religion. He thinks of religion as something other than being born again or whatever. But essentially, every one of them was talking from a religious perspective. I'm intrigued by that, you know, that because that, in a sense, is a discussion which excludes or at least which a lot of people will not feel they will want to participate in and join in. They were not fine. Their resolution to the conflict or the past in religious faith, they have to find it in something else. That what was wrong with that film was the silliness of thinking that the quoting the Bible back to Ian Paisley would solve the whole problem. It was just so trite as to be almost unbearable to watch.
Alex and Maliki, thanks a lot. Have a good weekend. Thank you very much indeed.